Hey, this is Double J, Jeff Jarrett, WWE Hall of Famer, and you're listening to the My 1-2-3 Cents Podcast.
It's my personality to be jittery. It's part of my charm.
Wrestling fans,
are you ready?
It's time for My 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network.
Give me a hell yeah!
Now, here's your host.
The man is also a very long, dear, personal friend of mine.
Does the guy have a name?
Yes, he has a name.
Kevin Huntsberger.
Woo! Kevin! You're stupid.
Hey friends, welcome to episode 526 of the My 1-2-3 Cents podcast, and I am not good at math. I don't know. We still have 90 plus episodes until episode 619. Hopefully Rey Mysterio joins us, but for this week we'll have to settle with Chad Smart, who is joining me once again from the left coast. Chad, what is going on in your neck of the woods?
Nothing, absolutely nothing at the moment.
Okay. All right.
Well, no, I think there's some fires raging and probably some home break-ins and some other crimes being committed.
There you go. That is Southern California. Not much unlike Southern Illinois, just on a smaller scale. We're going to talk a lot of nostalgia this week. On the podcast, and kind of on the heels of, as we're recording this now on Sunday morning, kind of removed a few hours from the return of Saturday night's main event. And we did a podcast episode, I don't know, probably about 2 months ago when they first announced Saturday night's main event was coming back. I want to get your take. I want to get your views because I have a feeling we may have differing opinions, but I'd like to hear what you thought of the return of Saturday night's main event after a 16-year hiatus from when it was on NBC in primetime, which those years I don't count as nostalgic, obviously, as the 80s and early 90s version of SNME. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, it's an automatic thumbs down for me for the show because there were no opening promos in front of a green screen. And that, to me, is Saturday night's main event. That was one of the things. And I know they put promos online at a time, but they were not in front of a green screen with the cheesy logo of the wrestler. So if you're going to go nostalgic, stop half-assing it. That's my take.
Wow. Somebody's been drinking the Tony Khan Kool-Aid this morning. Man.
Well, I was actually going to say, and I know this is my bias, but I don't think it was any coincidence that Collision started with some backstage promos before last night's episode, which they did in the early days of Collision. But to me, those felt more in spirit of Saturday Night's Main Event than the ones that WWE did. And I'm admitting I'm biased.
Oh, hold on. I got something for you here. I got some chapstick for Chad to kiss Tony Khan's ass a little more. You should have come to St. Louis last week.
I should have.
Some of the wrestling fans here in Southern Illinois made the trip up and actually got pics with Tony Khan. So.
Oh, man. Yeah, I've been watching Collision, which was taped in St. Louis. And yeah, it's good. I mean, other than the match that I snapped you, the Snapchat, and said, stop putting people that don't win on TV on TV. You got to build up characters. But no, I mean, in all seriousness, I thought Saturday Night's Main Event was a good show. But, and this is the thing, I thought it was fine. The matches were fine. And one of my, I don't know how to classify it because it's not a complaint. It's actually a good thing, but it's just different, is that every match ended with one finisher. You know, it wasn't the spam finishers that we get in a lot of matches. So it seemed like, on one hand, I enjoy that because it makes the finishing move mean something. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's just because I'm not used to it, it felt kind of cheap. It felt like, oh, that's it. The match is over. But I think they said early in the show that in the history of Saturday Night's Main Event, only a title has changed only twice.
Yeah, I didn't realize that.
And so I think maybe people went into this expecting, you know, something big to come out, like either the women's title changing or Kevin Owens change. And then when that didn't happen, it just felt kind of like, oh, okay, well, kind of a letdown. I mean, they did crown a new U.S. champion, women's U.S. Yeah. champion. But yeah, I mean, overall, show is fine. But I think also, had it not been in prime time, if it had been in the old Saturday Night Live time slot, it would have been different. Mm-hmm. Well, and even, you know, looking at those shows, you know, Saturday Night's Main Event, the original ones, were not, and granted, I know it's a different time frame, but they weren't known for necessarily the big story moments or the big matches. You know, it seemed like, you know, Hogan versus Nikolai Volkov. Mm-hmm. Did you really expect Nikolai Volkov to win the title?
Right. Yeah, I mean, those early days, it was a 90-minute show. It came on at 10:30 Central Time here in the Midwest. And yeah, just that feeling of, and I will agree with you on the green screen and doing, you know, if we're going to go nostalgic, I think the promos at the beginning, well, they weren't at the beginning. And I think, and I'm not trying to make excuses or justify why they did what they did, but I'm wondering if part of that was to get, you know, I didn't even count whether what six matches or
five. Something,
five matches. Okay. To me, the pacing of the show was great. I didn't feel, and I haven't watched Raw since they've cut back to 2 hours, but I don't feel like there was a lot of shenanigans, skits and entertainment, if you will.
Go ahead. Face your thought. No, I'll jump in. Oh, I was going to say, and I think maybe that's part of the nostalgia part too. Saturday Night's Main Event, you know, watching, you know, Uncle Elmer's wedding reception or the Halloween party with all the wrestlers dressed in costume. And so that was missing. But yeah, I thought the show flowed fine. And I watched it on Peacock afterwards, which is cut down to an hour. And I think it's an hour and 36 minutes, but I think the last five are like a Becky Lynch and a Charlotte Flair promo videos. They're not even part of the show.
Okay.
So I found that weird that they cut out the commercial breaks for the peak, but I guess when it streamed on Peacock, it probably had commercials. It probably didn't stay it with.
Did. I yeah, it with. Did. I watched on Peacock because our, you know, we cut the. I've told you before, we've cut the cord here and was watching. I tried to get it on our regular TV, and we spent the day shopping in Paducah for Christmas. Got home, started wrapping some of the stuff before our son got home. And I needed to shoot my Christmas beer advent video. So I had 7 minutes and I ran out to the garage, did that real quick. I got back into the house at 6:59 and I went to regular TV. And of course, our local NBC affiliate wasn't coming through. So I go on to Peacock and I hit the wrong button. And so when it finally clicked on, it had just came on when they were doing the little thing on the TV that said, NBC Saturday Night's Main or Saturday Night, and I mean, I'm actually, pardon me for being so cheesy, I'm getting goosebumps retelling this because I'll be honest, if my wife wasn't sitting there, I probably would have had a tear because it hit me in the feels, like the nostalgia was overwhelming. I had the goosebumps, and then I do wish they would have done, and I think the promos that they did that they put on, I think I watched it on Twitter, but it's on their social media platforms. It was about 3.5 minutes. I think that was a little too long because back in the day, they didn't do every participant in every match. And I feel like they did that this time around, but I agree. I think I would have had the cheesy background. I don't remember if they did that 16 years ago when it came back on NBC in primetime or not, if they had the cheesy, I know they did the promos, but I don't remember them being in front of a green screen, but I could be wrong on that.
Yeah, I don't remember. I mean, the only one I remember is JBL. Like, gripping
that's
off
the one I remember too. Isn't that weird?
Mustache and saying, like, my name's not Earl, my name's JBL.
Yeah.
JBL is a wrestling god, and we should all, you know, acknowledge him. But,
you know, I could not stand JBL when he was wrestling, you know, as JBL. And, you know, that was his job. He's a heel and he's trying to get you to not like him. But he's been filling in for Bruce Pritchard, I told you a while back, on Something to Wrestle With. And, man, he is entertaining as hell with the stories and the things that he's talking about. So, some unwarranted JBL hate, I guess, from me back in the day. But again, you know, I agree. I think that the flashbacks would have been good. I thought Jesse was going to do the whole show. I'm still kind of jury out on him just doing the main event. I almost would have liked to have seen him and Joe Testator do the whole show, the two of them. But I do feel like Jesse at points was a little, you know, he's 70 plus years old and hasn't done this in quite some time. So I think for overall, though, he did a good job. But I think part of my problem with the three-man booth was Pat McAfee specifically, and I'm not trying to knock him, but I think a lot of times he tries to put himself over more so than what is happening in the ring. And maybe I'm wrong on that. That was just my takeaway from watching him on Saturday Night's Main Event.
Yeah. I've discussed it on the show before that I don't really pay attention to a lot of commentary because WWE commentary for so long was so bad that I've got selective hearing so I can just phase it out. And during the main event, because I was watching it at like midnight, I had the TV low so that neighbors didn't get annoyed with Pat McAfee's yelling. But so I don't really recall anything from the commentary during the main event, but just when Jesse first came out at the beginning of the show, like, and like you said, he's, you know, 70 plus years old. Like, he just looked old. I don't know if he's got something. I mean, it looked like he was shaking quite a bit. And I mean, going back to bias, talk about JBL. I am not a fan of Jesse Ventura, the person, in the last 20 plus years. You know, he was great as a governor, and then he's kind of gone. Anyway, so I didn't really pay attention to the commentary, is basically what I'm saying. So I don't know how, I can't judge him for how his commentary was. If he, you know, was the same kind of Jesse character that he was with Gorilla Monsoon back in the day, or if, you know, and I don't know how much he's watching the current product. Mm-hmm. So I know I saw some comment about, because he called Kevin Owens Kevin Owen. And people are like, oh my, you know, he doesn't. And I'm like, so, I mean, if Pat Patterson was still alive, he would call him Kevin Owen too, and he would say, you're going true. Banana. So
that's true. That is,
I
true.
I mean, I'm not going to get on Jesse for missing an S. You know, it'd be one thing, you know, if he called him Sami Zayn instead, you know, that'd be different.
But, right. Or, but I thought, you know, overall, again, like you said, and I liked that they, you know, back in the day, it did seem more, and this was, you know, obviously pre-Attitude Era and pre-Monday Night War era, so they would throw in a Coco Beware versus Sergeant Slaughter match, or, you know, we'd get that kind of, I hate to use the word jobber, but that enhancement match, and that was usually the last match, because as you're watching at 10:30 at night, by midnight, people are going to bed, they're turning off the TVs, they're not paying attention, so they always got the good stuff. Hogan or Savage or Warrior or whomever, Piper, was out there early on. And then as the show went on, the matches became less significant. This year, or this time around, they showed it with Kevin Owens and Cody closing the show. I'm curious to know, you know, we had talked about this being, you know, when we were kids and that nostalgic feeling again, we wanted it all the time. But I think what made it so great was the fact that it was about every quarter, every, you know, 6 or 8 weeks that they would do a Saturday Night's Main Event. And it was on late. Now, of course, when they switched over to Fox in 91, 92, we saw it in primetime because Fox didn't really have a Saturday Night late programming option, I don't think, back in that time. So we're getting another one, though, in a month, you know. January 25th, right before the Royal Rumble. I think it's the week before the Rumble itself. I don't know if this is going to become a once a month thing. Do they go all in with the nostalgia here on out, or was that just kind of the, it's back and we're going to knock you over the head with the nostalgia, but now we're going to kind of ease into things without the nostalgia? What do you think, or what would you like to see them do? Because recreating the nostalgia every time, does that work?
I think, you know, they've only announced the next one, so we don't know how soon after. Because I think I've read there's supposed to be like 4 or 5 per year. I could be making that up. I don't remember where I saw that. I think a month is too soon to have another one, because like you said, you want to keep them special. But I would say if they're going to do it, maybe it's not a nostalgia thing to go back to that, but I think having a different feel mm-hmm. for the show would be better. And I think that across the board for all wrestling shows, you know, if you have more than one show, say Raw and SmackDown and NXT, you know, AEW's got Collision, Rampage, Dynamite, like they should feel different. Mm-hmm. Don't want, and I know, you know, when SmackDown first came on and it had the giant fist stage and it did have a different feel, but now they use the same setup for both Raw and SmackDown. So they're the same. So I would say, you know, maybe you don't have to go all in with the nostalgia like you did, like they did last night, but I would definitely try to have a different look, feel, you know, maybe different ring ropes. I like the smaller entrance way, mm-hmm. You know, to where fans could accost wrestlers in like the old days. If someone brings a knife and wants to stab, you know, like Solo Sikoa, if he's on the next show. But, you know, speaking of nostalgia too, you know, last night we saw Tito Santana, Coco Beware, and Greg Valentine, just in the audience.
Right.
How do you feel, like, to me, if they're going to bring the legends in, have them do something. And I don't mean like, you know, don't beat up a current star, you know, like they would do like with Heath Slater, you know, when he was jobbing mm-hmm. to.
Yeah.
But like have some interact to kind of like a passing the torch or just a generational moment with the talent.
You know, I actually, that was going to be my next question to you. So I had been thinking about that after watching it, because I thought I read somewhere too, and correct me if I'm wrong, that Hulk Hogan was supposed to be a part of all of this too.
I never saw it. The only name that I saw was Ted DiBiase. Then he got canceled this week. But speaking of Hulk Hogan, and I didn't notice this, someone pointed this out to me. There was no Hulk Hogan in the opening montage. And I don't know if Hulk Hogan was supposed to be there, if he was ever booked. I think he was at the UFC fight last night. Mm. But to me, and I know, you know, there's the whole persona or perception of Hulk Hogan today. Mm-hmm. But I think not having him in the montage, kind of like, you can't rewrite history as much as you may want to. You know, and Hogan was a significant part of Saturday Night's Main Event. So, and I mean, I don't think he needed to necessarily be there, but to not have him in the montage is kind of, I don't know what a correct adjective would be, but
shitty
play maybe.
I'll have to go back. I thought he was in the little thing that they did at the beginning, but I'll have to go back and look, because I was too busy trying to not weep in front of my wife. So I'll go back and watch that. But yeah, I agree with you on maybe not just doing the quick little introductions of the mm-hmm. legends. You know, we had Hammer Valentine and Coco Beware, Jimmy Hart, Tito Santana, and for the life of me, I can't remember who was standing between Tito Santana and Jimmy Hart last night.
It was some guy. I think it was like some
production guy. Yeah, that's right.
Behind the scenes guy, yeah.
I just wonder too, you know, what they could have done skit-wise, or, you know, done something maybe reminiscent. I know that first episode of Saturday Night's Main Event was falling the night before Mother's Day, so they did a little Mother's Day tribute. I remember
was
that.
Was Mr. T on that episode?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Exactly. But yeah, I agree. I wonder if they could have, you know, and again, we could sit here all day and name people that could have, should have, maybe would have been there, but Hogan, Wendy Richter and Cyndi Lauper, who are all, and Mr. T for that matter, all four still with us. Mm-hmm. And we're all four part of that very first show. Then now they name dropped all of these people, of course, but I think it would have been nice to maybe see them, even if it was a pre-recorded vignette or promo or something. But again, you know, you had 2 hours, which was 30 minutes longer than a typical Saturday Night's Main Event. So on that hand, it was nice, but overall, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the nostalgia. And then again, I thought the matches that they put on were solid matches. I almost wonder if Sami Zayn and Drew McIntyre was a little rushed, considering they just kind of started this whole little thing between them. But it was good. It was fun. Yeah. And surprisingly, no Bloodline, you know, no Roman. And but I guess with Survivor Series being as big as it was and focused on those guys, it was good to see kind of Cody get a moment. And then I guess I need to ask you too about the Winged Eagle. Were you, I know they showed that little video before the other day, you know, what, and then people obviously, I think everybody speculated that it was going to be the Winged Eagle. Are you that nostalgic for belts? Did that matter to you, or what were your thoughts on that?
I mean, one, I was really hoping it was the Stardust outfit that was in the, if it wasn't for the internet, I don't think I would even have a conscious thought about the Winged Eagle because I mean, I know the belt has changed throughout the years, but I've never been like, oh my God, to me. And maybe this is because I was more of a, you know, WCW fan than WWE, WWF, but the big gold belt is, if you tell me to name a belt, that's the one that's going to come to mind.
Right.
You know, I'm not going to be like, oh, the Winged Eagle or the white strap Intercontinental title. It's like, I mean, I guess I didn't really start paying attention to belts until, like, you know, the Smoking Skull belt or the Brahma Bull, when they became more personalized, which I'm not a fan of,
right?
In that regard. But, you know, and they said that the Winged Eagle is only for one night only.
Yeah.
But I'm curious now with what happened after the show and Kevin Owen taking the belt, if it's going to be used as a storyline prop.
Well, I was expecting to see him pull out a hammer. And then we bring back the hardcore championship. Kind of, but
yeah. I mean, I think, again, if you're going for nostalgia, the Winged Eagle belt was fine. But again, I'm not a belt collector. I don't care. So, I mean, if I have my Money in the Bank briefcase with me at the next WWE show that I go to and someone's got the Winged Eagle, I might try to cash in on them. But...
Well, yeah, so that's kind of our Saturday night's main event recap and discussion. Well,
Real quick. No, I was just going to say, you know, you talked about no Bloodline. And do you think, you know, you mentioned Survivor Series, but do you think also because they have the first Raw on Netflix coming up in a couple weeks, where they've announced Roman versus Solo, do you think that was the reason why not to have the Bloodline on the show?
Yeah, I thought as soon as I said that about the Bloodline not being there, I thought of that because, you know, January you've got for sure Netflix debut, then Saturday night's main event, and then a week after that, which it's February 1st, but it's all still in that, you know, 4.5 week time period, three big events with Netflix, Saturday night's main event, and then of course the Royal Rumble itself. So, but again, I know they've announced it being Roman versus Solo at Netflix. I think we agree on this too, that Solo is a, you know, he's the Timu version of the Bloodline. I almost wonder, I feel like Jacob Fatu should have been put more into that role, but I know that he didn't come in until later. But I am expecting, kind of like you said earlier, Hulk Hogan versus Nikolai Volkoff. You know, Hulk Hogan's not going to lose the belt to Nikolai.
Yeah. I was going to say with the Raw on Netflix, if any of our listeners want to, can you send me some GoFundMe funds so that I can afford to go to the show? Because I was hoping to go to the first step, you know, because it's literally like 6 miles down the road from me. And this is a whole nother topic for another show maybe, but prices of tickets now are astronomical. And I, you know, so I'm curious what the crowd will be like for the first show. But also, going back to the topic at hand, I agree with you that I don't know. I don't know where I'm going with this. My thought got sidetracked. I think not rushing a lot of people onto Saturday night's main event was the right call. And like I said, I think all the matches had a decent time. Kind of surprising that the main event only went about 20 minutes, between 20, 25 minutes, where, a pay-per-view match would have probably gone at least 35 to 40.
Yeah.
But now, I guess in that same vein, though, because they didn't show the Kevin Owens attack on air, how do you feel? They did this with Kevin Owens initially turning on Cody after Bad Blood. How do you feel about them doing more off-camera storyline beats that they're hoping that fans will record and post online?
I feel like it's kind of part of this whole global effort. I don't know, because I know at one time international fans still had WWE Network, and I know that is gone now. I don't know that Peacock broadcast internationally, globally. Mm-hmm. So watching Saturday night's main event, you either had to have NBC or Peacock. So I'm wondering if kind of sprinkling some of these bigger moments on social media, where again, you have that global audience and people can watch and see it. And then WWE, I think AEW does well with this. TNA, all the wrestling companies are getting it. WWE and I don't think this is bias. I think this could be substantiated. WWE's production effort as far as putting things out on social media for people to watch and see is part of their strategy, and they of course have that 50-year advantage on everybody as far as the brand awareness. So I think when they put stuff out there, people do pay attention and watch it and look at it. Like I said, this is not our day of watching, and then you had to wait until, we'd watch on Saturday night's main event. And then the syndicated shows either aired on Saturday afternoons or Sunday afternoons.
Yeah.
We watched them on Sundays, but I know other markets aired them on Saturday. So then you had to wait a whole nother week to see what had happened. If you missed Saturday night's main event, you'd have to wait to find out what had happened. So, it's a new era. It's a new day, pun intended. And I think that we're going to see more of that kind of effort, where you're going to have to watch. And that's where, again, as a wrestling, as a diehard, once upon a time as diehard wrestling fans, probably in our teens and 20s, if we were living in this era now, back then, we would have watched it all, but obviously we don't. I did, though, do a deep dive last night after the show and watched the promos from before the show started, and then watched the attack that Kevin Owens, because it kind of popped up, and I'm like, well, when did this happen? Because I watched until the Becky Lynch thing started on Peacock. And then I'm like, okay, they're showing bonus footage on social media, which to me, I think is kind of the wave of the future. That's how influencers like Logan Paul and the Big Boom or Big Justice and, the Rizzler and the Costco guy, that's how they got noticed, was through social media. So I think companies, not just WWE and not just wrestling, I think you're going to see more of this with the NFL. I think you'll see it with where they can kind of tie in some pieces. The Jake Paul and Mike Tyson thing is an example of that too, where you can tell stories on social media where there's really no limit to how much you can do, whereas on network television you're kind of bound by time restrictions and all that kind of thing. So I think it's going to kind of be here to stay.
Yeah, I've got a story about syndicated programs and Saturday Night's Main Event that I think I've told before, but I'll tell it in a minute. But I was telling you before we started recording, I was watching the latest Hey EW episode, which features Matt Cardona, your broski. Mm-hmm. And RJ City brings up, like, hey, you were the first to really use the social media and YouTube back when he was doing the Z Long Island story. And it's like, and it's interesting because he, Cardona did that, and kind of like WWE didn't like it, I guess, because he never really, they never used the popularity of that to translate into a Zack Ryder push or, you know, but now that they've kind of come around and saying, like, seeing the positive effects that can be done with social media. And like I said, it's the time age that we're living in, and people, like I said, have cut the cable cord. So it's like, they're not just watching on your weekly programs. I think it's smart and interesting to use fans to try to help tell the story, and knowing that fans are recording
right
everything. You know,
once upon a time, it said on the ticket, you know, no video recording. I don't think you could take still pictures at some point.
I mean, I have been to a show in the last, I don't know, 6-7 years where I was taking photos and I had security come up to me and tell me, I think they were confused because there was a sign saying no video, but luckily I got a picture of your buddy Neville to send to you. But then after that, they were like, you can't take fun. I'm like, since when? But I remember, Bad Blood, the original Bad Blood, which, were you at that show in St. Louis or were you in Alabama? Okay.
No, I was, that was like the week before or the month before we moved. But yeah, I was there.
Okay. I remember, after that show, my cousin and friend that we were with were standing out by the entranceway to where the wrestlers would drive down under the Kiel Center or Enterprise Center, whatever it is now in St. Louis. And, I remember like Jim Ross and Vince McMahon driving by us. And then Triple H and China were waiting across the street for the ambulance to bring out Sean. And, we weren't recording. We weren't taking photos at that moment. But if that happened today, I'm sure like more people would have been there and, would have been like, oh my gosh, here's the ambulance taking Shawn Michaels to the, to sell the injury of the Bad Blood. So I think all in all, it's just an interesting time with access to so much media and so much information. So that I think one, I guess it can help tell the story and it can also hinder because, when you have someone that's injured and then you see them at Disneyland the next week and fans are taking photos and like, hey, wait,
Right.
I mean, you think back to ECW days when Sandman got blinded by a fireball, like he sold that by not going out of his house for however many months. And if he went out, he had his eyes bandaged to, even though it was just, ECW, like,
right.
So you keep that, but my quick story about syndication, I think the Saturday Night's main event where Mr. T and I think he may have boxed Cowboy Bob Orton to box Orton on a show. Yeah. So that was set to air on a Saturday night. And this one, we had the big satellite dish and I don't remember what channel it was or if it was like a feed, but we saw like the syndicated program for WWF that week. And me and Gene was talking about like, oh, on Saturday Night's main event, this is what happened. And I'm like, that hasn't even aired yet. Like, I thought the show was live. I didn't realize.
Oh, yeah.
Taped. And so I'm like, wait, my entire world was shattered. It was like finding out that Santa Claus was real. So.
Those were the days. Those were the days. Well, I want to do a deeper dive at some point on social media and wrestling for another show. Like you said, I think that there's a lot of meat on the bone there that we didn't talk about today. But I also want to, as we're kind of rolling through that nostalgia train, I mentioned it a few times, and I've done a couple of quick little podcasts on it as well. But December 27th marks the 40-year anniversary of the very first house show that I went to. And I wanted to talk a little bit about house shows and how they've evolved and changed through the years. And also reminisce about your first house show experience, which I believe we've talked about as well. But, mine was 2 days after Christmas. I don't remember if that was part of our Christmas gift back then, because we talked about ticket prices back then. And I think we were on the floor probably about 7 or 8 rows back. And I don't think those tickets were probably more than $15 or $20 a piece, which in today's world is crazy to think about. But, we got to see everybody from TV, Hulk Hogan, Rowdy Roddy Piper, Jimmy Superfly Snuka, the Junkyard Dog, all of my favorites. The only one that we didn't see that night that in hindsight, I wish I would have tried to go to see in a live event was Andre the Giant, because I just can only imagine. But we would run over to the where they would come through, and my brother's claim to fame, he got to touch Hulk Hogan as Hogan went to the ring to wrestle Brutus Beefcake. But again, it was one of those shows where you knew Brutus Beefcake was not going to walk out as champion, but just that fun overall feel and experience and seeing it live. And, you know, when I was 12 at the time I was 11 at the time. You kind of just going back into that, watching it with those young eyes. And I hadn't been a fan for very long. And I think this was right before the John Stossel thing aired on ABC. So it was kind of quote unquote still real to me. But I think there's still a different vibe when you go to a live event. I know WWE has said they're cutting back live events to like 200 in 2025, which I guess that includes like these Saturday Night Main Events and Monday Night Raw and SmackDown and NXT. So the true house show experiences, I think, is going to become a distant memory before very long, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I just did a quick search on Ticketmaster, and I could only find one house show listed. And it's part of the holiday tour. It's on December 29th up in Rosemont at the Allstate, where we had our first WWE WrestleMania experience, 22. But yeah, and I, again, looking at ticket prices for that show, and it's just, you know, I think probably my first house show was like $10, if that. And now it's to sit in the back of the floor is over $100. So, yeah.
Your first experience was at a high school gym, right?
My first wrestling show. Yes, was a high school gym. And we've talked about it. I think you could probably say it was, I'm trying to think of the promotion that Central States may have been putting on, or NWA affiliate. You know, I don't remember. The only thing I remember is the first show, the main event was Ric Flair versus Harley Race.
Yeah, that's
so quite that, I mean, that's a good match, but.
Right.
But again, it was a high school gym, you know, one light above the ring that was hanging so low at the beginning that whenever people would suplex someone, they would kick the light.
Oh, wow.
So eventually, like after the second match, they figured out they needed to raise the light a little bit. But my first WWE house show, though, wasn't until 94, 95. It wasn't the TV taping.
Okay.
Discuss the 8 hour long, which now I think that's where AEW got their blueprint for how a show should be like. But my first house show at WWE was, it was 96, because it was the week before King of the Ring. And I think I've told this story before, where we were on the floor and had access to the railing where guys were coming out. And the third match on the show was Duke the Dumpster Drosy versus Steve Austin.
And I was at that show too.
Okay. So you know that show. So that was the week before King of the Ring.
Yes.
No one cared about Steve Austin at that show.
Yeah.
But except my cousin and I, he had old WCW magazines. And so we had the ones with the Hollywood Blondes on it, because they were announcing Brian Pillman coming into the, you know, like the next day on Raw. So we're like, you need to team up with Pillman again. You know, Pillman will kick your ass if you don't reform the Blondes. And yeah, he didn't seem to care too much. But
I remember standing at that show because Owen Hart wrestled Savio Vega, maybe. I don't remember who he wrestled, but I took my dad, because it was right before Father's Day, and we were on the floor as well and by the guardrail.
And I can remember standing up in my photos.
Yeah, I remember standing by a bunch of kids, and we were all jaw jacking Owen, and he pointed and he said, "Sit down, fat boy," to the guy standing. And so, that's funny. I can't remember if we've had this conversation before or not, but
I think we had, but I didn't realize we may have been that close to each other. I mean, we weren't sitting by the aisle, but whenever guys would come out, like before or after the match, we would run over
the
aisle. And that's the only other thing I remember. I remember the Smoking Guns wrestled. I don't remember who, but I have a photo of Sonny with guns. And then Vader took on Ultimate Warrior, because it was when like that 1 month period where Ultimate Warrior was back.
Yeah.
And then the main event was champion versus champion, Sean versus Goldust.
Yes. Wow. No. Well, you know, and house shows back in the day too, it was not uncommon for there to be a two shows going on, or sometimes they had A, B, and and C towns that they had talked about back in the day. But also, you know, my first house show in Cape Girardeau when I was in college was at the Show Me Center. It was a Saturday night, or it might have been a Sunday night. But earlier that day, they did a matinee in St. Louis. And so they, you know, it's a 2-hour drive. So they came to St. Louis. Hogan wrestled Ric Flair at that event. And then that night in Cape Girardeau, it was Rowdy Roddy Piper versus Ric Flair. But a lot of those same guys that were on that card in St. Louis had made the trip. So, you know, when they say they wrestled, you know, 7 days a week, twice on Sunday, that's not bullshit. They, those guys, a lot of those guys, a lot of that talent was doing that in the 80s and 90s. And, you know, I guess one has to wonder, you know, yeah, we're sitting here talking about them cutting back on house shows, but is this going to improve the overall health and wellness down the road of the performers? And, you know, look at AEW, for example. I know they experimented with the house show format and did some things, but on one hand, those were great events because guys and gals got in the ring and could hone their craft and do stuff before they went on TV with it. But on the other hand, you're driving, you know, one, you're driving 2 hours in between shows on the same day, much less than getting up that next morning after wrestling twice and then driving to the next town to do TV tapings or whatever. And, you know, like we said, those marathon TV tapings that were 4 or 5 hours a piece, that puts a lot of wear and tear and takes a toll off in the name of entertainment when there's no off season for these guys and women. So, again, much love and respect for wrestlers, especially those that were doing it back in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, because it was a whole different world for them, I think, than it, what it is today. And not to say back in my day, we did it harder and better. You know, it, I think it improving conditions for today's talent is important, and we shouldn't begrudge that against the talent that is out there today doing it.
Yeah. I do. You remember Vicki Lawrence's talk show?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Do you remember the episode where they had WCW wrestlers on there?
I remember it happening. I couldn't tell you any specific. I'm
probably going to butcher the numbers, but I believe Jesse Ventura was on there. I think it was Jesse, Sting, maybe Rick Rude, and someone, and Johnny B. Badd. But Jesse talked about, like, you know, he had bought a brand new 1970 something car, and within a year, put 200,000 miles on it because of how much he was driving to show. So yeah, and you touched on a point that I was gonna bring up, but yeah, I think scaling back, one, is better for the health, obviously, but at the same time, it does take away that being able to try out things before it gets on. You know, if you're gonna have a feud with someone, you can work and see what works in front of a crowd, what doesn't, or in case, you know, like AEW, where you have a lot of young talent, you know, like WWE has NXT for wrestlers to train and start. But for AEW, like, if you're not getting those reps in the ring, or, you know, how much can you improve wrestling once or twice a week if you're not doing the indie
scene? Right. Well, and I think that's where WWE is at an advantage too, with the Performance Center. And, and I think, you know, even though the home base is Florida, I think they have facilities or ring set up in other parts of the country too, so you don't have to necessarily live in Florida. AEW, correct me if I'm wrong, they don't have any, like, quote unquote training facility per se, but I know, like, Dustin Rhodes has a wrestling school, and some of the other you know, talents have schools and stuff that I guess they could go in and get some extra training or extra time in the ring, I suppose.
Yeah. And now with WWE's ID program, whatever that actually is, where they name specific schools as being, you know, ones that will help you theoretically get to WWE quicker.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, it's been a fun little stroll down memory lane, nostalgia, and just remembering those good times and being a kid. And again, like I said, when it, back in those days, we went, it was December of 80, and I'm weird with dates. It was December of 84. Then January and March of 85, the NWA had come to town. So we went to shows. That first show in the WWF was at the arena, the old arena in St. Louis. And then in early 85, NWA was coming to the Kiel Auditorium. in St. Louis. And so we went to those, and then we would start going to, WWF started working the Keel as well. I feel like they were coming monthly. Now, we didn't go every month. We didn't go every, several months, but there were a handful of times that we went. And again, that nostalgia, that bonding time with my dad, my uncle, my brother. And then there was always a group of friends, the dads, it was usually on a Friday or Saturday night, and the dads would take all the boys out to watch wrestling and, get dinner somewhere. And, it's just that memory that I wish my kids, my son was into it for a little bit. We actually went to a house show in Cape Girardeau once, and then went to the Royal Rumble in St. Louis in 2012. My daughter watched for a second, and she went to more of the indie shows with me than.
Yeah. You let her get beat up, so you think she's going to stick around?
Yeah, exactly. But, I think more than anything, that might be part of it. The nostalgia feeling is going back to childhood and just kind of remembering that feeling. They say you remember the moments, you remember the way you felt, or, when you treat someone a certain way, you remember how that person treated you. And I think, that's kind of where that all comes in as well to play is just those feelings. So not to sound too sappy or sentimental or whatever, but, I just wanted to kind of stroll down, and it all kind of timed out right with Saturday Night's Main Event coming back and the nostalgic feeling that gave. So Chad, I'll give you the last word here.
Fudgesicle. I think, the nostalgia is obviously very, a very powerful feeling. And, especially for our generation, I'm going to go off on a tangent here and hopefully it'll make sense. I'm sure I'm not the first to coin this phrase or thought, but I feel like our generation is the first Peter Pan generation, where we don't really grow up. We want to keep hold of what we had as kids, whether, toys, video games, wrestling. I'm going to stop there because I think it's a whole nother hour long discussion that we can have on the psychological aspects of that. But yeah, I think there is something about just wanting to feel, as you said, when we were growing up, we were diehard wrestling fans. Mm-hmm. We're still wrestling fans today, but it's not that same. So when you can capture that feeling and remember why you're a wrestling fan, that helps.
Yeah. Perfect. Perfect way to end this week's episode. Again, friends, thank you for listening and are watching. Thanks to those who contributed to the toy drive. Actually, as we finish recording this episode, I am going to go and pick up the rest of the wrestling action figures. I'll post an update on our social media, so be sure to check that out. But if you donated, thank you so very much for doing so. Have a great rest of your week, and we will see you next time.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.